Hello, everyone. Welcome back from the break. Thank you for coming back from the break and not falling into a black hole at some local eatery. Our next presentation is a steganography presentation, and most of the things presented here aren't cool crypto or crypto-like things. They're more implementation things, and this one actually has some really neat crypto primitive style trickery to it. So that's how it's distinctive within our program. So it's going to be presented by Rakan El Khalil. Did I present? Yeah, by Rakan El Khalil from who's going to Columbia University. And here's Rakan.
Hey everyone. All right. So just before we begin, how many people here know a little bit about steganography? All right. Sizable chunk, almost everyone. Cool. Okay, so also before we begin, there are a lot of people who make this mistake, and even computer science people, and it baffles me. Steganography is not the same thing as stenography. There's this extra syllable there. And there's the slide. And just to drive the point home, this is stenography. All right? Steganography. Okay, so I'll just give a brief overview of what steganography is, just for completeness. Steganography is, the main point of steganography is to conceal information, right? You have Adam and Bob, and you want to send information, Adam wants to send information to Bob, but you don't want any a third party eavesdropper to hear in on the conversation and understand what's going on. But at the same time, you don't want to use cryptography, because otherwise people would realize that something fishy might be going on. And that's the point of steganography. Historically, it's a pretty old art created by the Greeks and Romans. And back in the day, they had pretty... steganography was just based on having a... The method was secret. So they would do things like they'd take a slave, shave his head off, tattoo something on his head, wait for the hair to grow back, and send him over the border. And that was their steganographic technique. Obviously, nowadays, things like this would not work, but modern steganography relies on redundancy in the medium. And what that means is that if you have more than one way to express the same thing, then the choice that you make on the way, which way you choose, allows you to send information. So, say, if you want to say, John is dead, you can say John is dead, or John is deceased, or John is no more, or whatever, John is no more, or, and whichever way you pick can give information to the person that you're sending a message to. And just as an illustration of this, there's this sketch probably many of you know from Monty Python, and it's called the Dead Parrot Sketch. And the premise is just, this guy comes in, he bought a parrot, and the parrot just died. So he comes back to the shop to complain about it. So you see how many ways there are to say something dead. Could I get some sound? Cool. Oh.
I took the liberty of examining that parrot. And I discovered that the only reason that it had been sitting on its perch in the first place was that it had been nailed there.
Of course it was nailed there, otherwise it muscled up to those bars and boom!
Look, matey. This parrot wouldn't boom if I put 4,000 volts through it. It's a bleeding demise.
It's not! It's pining!
It's not pining, it's passed on! This parrot is no more! It has ceased to be! It's expired and gone to meet its maker! This is a late parrot! It's a stiff! The rest of life it rests in peace! If you hadn't nailed it to the perch, you would be pushing out the baby! It's down the perch and join the crowd invisible! This is an ex-parrot!
But anyways, you get the idea. So I'm just going to talk about general current technique, current steganographic techniques. So as you just saw, there's text, John is dead, deceased, and so on. And you also have sound. So the human ear cannot distinguish between many, many things. And so if you insert imperceptible little echoes into a sound file, then to the human ear, we wouldn't hear anything weird about that. But computer could extract those echoes, and that would be the steganographic message. Same thing with the image. Colors, the human eye can only distinguish so many colors. So if you have two colors that are very similar to each other and just flip the least significant bit, then the human eye wouldn't notice anything odd about an image, but the computer could extract LSB. There's also more stuff, but anyways. Yeah, so now you know what steganography is and how it sort of works. And now I'll show you Haydn. The difference between Haydn and current steganographic techniques is that Haydn embeds into executable binaries. Now, I spoke about redundancy and how it's important for embedding information. The more different ways you have, the more message you can encode. And the problem with program binaries is that there is just not a lot of redundancy in program binaries. Instruction sets were designed to be as non-redundant as possible, because if they're redundant, the more ways there are to do any given thing, then your processor has to be big, and it's more expensive, and so on and so forth. Let me just demo you Haydn. Okay, so this work. Please work. Okay, it doesn't seem to be any net access. I'll do this later. All right. So, how would one find redundancy in an executable binary? One way I've found is that the instruction set actually has some inherent redundancy in it. Just a simple example to give you. You have addition, right? You want to add a number, 50, to a register. You could just as well subtract 50 from the same register, and functionally, those two instructions are identical in every way. But at the assembly level, they're different, different opcodes. In fact, I'm not even sure why there is a different opcode for addition and subtraction, because down at the CPU level, as far as I understand, you only have adders. So your subtraction, the immediate value, negative 50, gets converted immediately anyways to 50, and addition is done. But yeah, so at the assembly level, there are two different opcodes, and just by choosing in addition over a subtraction, we can embed one bit of information. Same thing for comparison. There are two different ways of comparing registers, and the difference there lies in the fact that you can put in you have different addressing modes, and your address could be the second operand or the first one, and depending on which one you want, then you can choose the first comparison or the second comparison. But for our purposes, since we're just comparing registers, it doesn't matter. They're both identical. And now these two instructions I showed you, you can embed one bit with each, because we only have two instructions. Now you can embed more bits, and that's an example of that is the XOR example. XORing two registers together simply clears said register. So, and you have four ways of doing that. As you can see, there's a XOR prime star that I discussed before, and you can just subtract the register from itself. And there are many others. And in fact, the most functionally equivalent instructions I found were, I think, a set of seven of them. I won't discuss that. It's, you can see it in the source code. But just to give you an example, if you wanted to encode message 011, three bits, in the assembly listing on the left, you can see there are three subtract three subtraction or additions. If we use the convention that addition is zero and subtraction is one, then you just go in and just flip whenever necessary. So the first subtraction or addition you see is sub EAX 256. You want a zero there, addition. You just flip it around to add negative 256. Same thing for the next addition. You want to flip that to represent one. So sub EBX, negative 32. And the third one is a one already, so you don't need to do anything about that. It's pretty simple. Let me try to demo again. No, still not working. Okay. Well. Okay, now Haydn does a bit more than just that. Since we're doing steganography, the real goal here is to embed as much information as possible into a binary while remaining undetected. And a means of remaining undetected is to keep the size of the binary the same. Because obviously you could add as much text as you want if all you did was append it or put it in a header somewhere or whatever. And in fact, to go back a little bit, those instructions I just showed you, they are of the same size, and they were chosen specifically for that purpose. You could otherwise do many things, such as instead of adding 50 to a register, you could add 25 twice, or I don't know, you could increase the entropy in your medium that way. But yeah, we don't do that. So just to give you more details on Haydn, everything gets encrypted before being embedded into the binary. And the reason for that is twofold. First of all, part of the non-detection part of steganography is that we don't want to leave any pattern in the binary that could indicate that there is something hidden in it. And Blowfish, I mean, any encryption allows us to have this random seeming text that we embed. And if we were to embed straight text, for example, ASCII, the most significant bit of every byte is 0 or 1, I don't remember. And so you would see every 8-bit, you'd see 0, 0, 0. And that's kind of weird to have that and would be a telltale sign that something's hidden in the binary. So that's one reason. And the other reason is that obviously you only want the intended recipient to be able to read the message. I won't talk about message length whitening. It's just a minor addition. Random walk. Okay. Another extra security measure is that whenever you're embedding anything into a medium, you could just go at it sequentially. So you have, 100 bytes of message and just look for the first instruction and then flip that around and keep on going until you reach the end of your message and then you're done. But the problem to anybody trying to break your system is that you'll see at the beginning of the program, you'll see this random data and then suddenly the statistical profile of the distribution of your instructions will be drastically different. And statistical profile should be pretty even all over the binary. And what I use is a random walk. It's just a pseudo random number generator seeded by the password. And random number generator spits out a random number, and you jump that many instructions, and then whichever instruction you land on, you embed information into that. And then you pick out another random number and you jump that many and so on and so forth. And when you reach the end of the executable, if you still have not finished embedding your data, then you just loop back to the beginning of the program, and keep on going. Now again, you're trying to embed as much as possible, right? So you can embed one bit of information with two instructions, two bits of information with four. But what do you do if you have seven is not eight, right? You can't embed three bits. we could just throw out the extra three instructions and not use and just use four of them to embed two bits, but that's kind of a waste. So what I do is I pick one of these instructions, the last one, to represent a joker instruction, which means no data is embedded in here. Skip to the next instruction, and in a set of seven instructions, that's the seventh one, and you can use six of them to embed three bits of information. So the first instruction would embed 000, second 001, and so on, and the sixth one would embed 101, and then seventh would be joker. Now you wouldn't be able to embed 110 or 111. But that's okay because statistically, since this is an encrypted message, you have as many zeros as ones, and the values in the ciphertext are uniformly distributed. So we don't waste a lot of instructions that way. And in fact, with this method, instead of only being able to encode 2 bits per instruction, you can encode 2.58 log of n minus 1. Alright, so talked about Stocker-Hyden, how it works, and so on, and Hyden is not foolproof at all. In fact, the pretty easy ways right now to attack it. I was talking about statistical distribution before. Although, thanks to the random walk, the distribution is pretty even of instructions all over the binary, instructions are not created equal. What that means is that you have a lot of positive additions, so add 50. You have quite a few negative additions, add negative 50. But you really have very, very few negative subtractions. For some reason, compilers just don't do that at all. And, Hyden creates very, very many, negative subtractions, as many as positive additions or negative additions, because it's we're talking about random data here. So if a attacker were to analyze statistical profile, then it would be pretty obvious that something is hidden in there. I'll talk later about ways of defeating that, but basically it's very difficult to use instructions to embed a message, because if you were to try to make this secure, then you could only embed as much message as the least most frequent instruction in your set. What this means is that the most I could embed in a set that has addition and subtraction is as many as there are negative subtractions. And since there's about like 1% of negative subtractions compared to anything else, then you could only embed 1% of the data that we can now. So it's kind of shitty. The other attack is, the medium is quite fragile. So what this means is that if you just flip one of the bits, everything breaks down because it's encrypted, so you wouldn't be able to decrypt it. I mean, it's low efficient CVC mode, so you could decrypt the first part, but eventually it would just break down. And there's also code optimizers. You have a bunch of programs that would just take your code, compiled code, and encrypt it. Basically, it's usually used for protection, anti-reverse engineering. If you were to pass a program that has steganography, Hyden embedded data in there, if you take a program and then use an encryptor on it, then there's no way that we could ever recover the data. Oh, and low encoding rate comes from the statistical distribution I was talking about before. And although it's not horrible, right now the encoding rate that we're able to achieve with Hyden is 1 in 150. What that means is that for every byte of data that you want to encode, you have to have 150 bytes of machine code. Just to give you a comparison, OutGuess, which is currently, I guess, the best JPEG steganography tool, can embed 1 in 17. So it's about a tenfold difference. Now, there is a way to fix all of this, and it's all about reordering. Instead of going in and messing around with the instructions, this is not implemented in Haydn right now. Implemented in Haydn, I implemented just instructions part. Instead of messing around with instructions, you can mess around with the ordering of elements in the binary. And just a simple example is functions. How are functions assembled into machine code? They're basically just assembled in the order that they were written in. Now, it doesn't have to be that way. You can mess around with their order and have some functions come in first in the program executable and some later. And the only difference in the machine code itself, other than the ordering, is the address that you're calling or jumping to. So if you were to do, if you're doing analysis of what gets called and what the functions are, then you can trivially just mess around with that. There's also arguments. The order of arguments is set by the programmer, and there's no reason why it has to be int A, float B, and so on. You can just mess around with that and embed information with that. And there's tons more register allocations, all the tables that you can think about, and even data. Data is stored in at specific addresses that are referred to, and you can just move those around without any functionality loss. And to give you an idea, the amount of information you can embed with that is, if there are n things that you can move around, then there are n factorial ways to order them. And number of bits is log 2 of n factorial. Now, for 1,000 things, that's about a kilobyte of data. For 10,000 things, that's something like, I don't remember, like 16 kilobytes. It grows pretty quickly. And, in fact, when, just some preliminary testing on how many things we can reorder, found that, the encoding rate goes down to 1 out of 37, which is just a factor of 2 away from JPEG encoding rates, which is pretty good. And, okay, the effect of that is it's really difficult to detect because there is no telltale sign that that something's been messed around with. There is no statistical distribution of anything that changes. And the encoding rate is great. Yeah, that's pretty much it. So, any question?
Now we have Q&A.
One thing that strikes me immediately about this, as opposed to using JPEG, is that JPEG, largely, whenever any bit is in a JPEG image is arbitrary, because a JPEG image is designed to display an image which doesn't have to have any particular structure. I mean, it has to look like a JPEG file, but other than that, it doesn't matter. Which means, in order to do effective steganography with JPEG, you have to have an original JPEG to compare it to. And that has always struck me as being a terrible weakness. And it looks like with yours, you actually don't have to do that, because you could just release a random executable without having to have an original executable to compare against, and you can just look at the instruction choices in it and determine.
Yes. For JPEG, you don't need to have the original JPEG to compare against in order to detect if there's anything hidden in there or not. The way JPEG steganography works is that you go around flipping the least significant bit, right? Basically, I mean, you work with coefficients, but it's the basic same idea. And if you look at JPEGs, although in theory they don't have an inherent structure to them, their least significant bits and coefficients do follow a pattern. And if you read Niels Probost's work on without guess, he was able to break every implementation of every steganographic implementation that uses JPEG with his technique. And this year, I think there are a couple more papers coming out that break outGUS as well. They're able to detect outGUS. So it's a field rife with research. And yeah, you're right. You don't need any... the same way you'd break JPEG, you'd break Haydn just by looking at the medium and seeing that there's something weird with it.
With the random walk for distributing or choosing which instructions to change and looping over once you reach the end, how do you deal with the possibility of changing the same instruction twice?
Oh, I just tag it. Once something's changed, it's tagged, and it's no more on the free list. And yeah.
Seems to me that in order to make it hard to detect if someone has embedded something in your executables, all you really need to do is use Gentoo Linux and have a flag to GCC that says whiten everything in the same way that Haydn manipulates things, and then just enable that flag in your make.conf. Gentoo Linux, for those of you who don't know, basically every system completely compiles all of its binaries from source. And so each installation will have a completely different random white randoming for the binary, and it would be basically impossible to tell with statistical analysis to find out if there's an embedded message or not.
I'm not sure I understand. You pass a flag to GCC, and GCC would do that?
Exactly. You could just make a change to GCC, which is like a flag that you could put in your C flags for the whole system, and what it would do would do the same types of manipulations that Haydn does, and it would do it in a statistically random way, such that you can't tell between an embedded message and a normal binary on that system.
Yeah, that's definitely a good idea.
Have you done any analysis of different instruction sets in terms of information Haydn density or anything like that?
Sorry, could you repeat your question?
All of your examples are with x86 assembly. And so I'm wondering if you've also looked at like PowerPC and MIPS and Alpha and any of the other to get an idea of how much information you can hide in there.
No, but I only looked at I386. I only looked at 6, but the concept applies equally because, you know, addition and subtraction are, you know, the same everywhere. But as far as how much information you can add, you can actually hide more in MIPS, I believe, because I don't remember the details, but since every instruction is the same size, you have some padding in front, and you can always mess around with that and flip bits into padding. And
yeah, it actually happens. MIPS doesn't have a subtract instruction, it only has an add. And some other things like that. My question was about the random walks. You do that to keep the statistics even. Is there any particular reason that you do that as opposed to just padding the entire rest of the embedded message with random noise and just stuffing, you know, modifying the entire file?
Wait, I'm sorry, could you just repeat that last part?
Yeah, so the random walk modifies a couple of bytes, a couple of instructions randomly through there. Is there any particular reason you use that to keep the statistics uniform versus simply embed your message in the beginning of the file as much space as you need, and then embedding random noise in the entire rest of the executable?
Yeah, because as I said, instruction distribution is not instructions are not created equally, and so if I were to have random noise all over the file, then it would look very 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 suspicious. Ideally, you'd only want to embed very little information in any executable. Just to avoid the skew. So yeah, having random noise everywhere would be a big telltale sign.
Alright, so there's been a lot of talk in the security community lately about rebasing executables, about reorganizing the layout of the functions, what pointers point where, with what offsets, what padding. It seems to me that you should be able to use rebasing as another channel for introducing entropy staking graphically.
Yeah, that sounds good.
You want to ensure that the resulting executable functions the same way as the starting executable, of course,
And, you know, the first thing I look at when I see your examples is, oh, there's probably side effects to the CPU flags, but you probably thought of that already. That's pretty easy. But then there's also side effects in execution time of those instructions. A sub probably runs a lot slower than an XOR. And then maybe the code reads its own code as data, in which case a sub and an add of the negative is not the same thing at all. Do you think this just never happens, or do you think Haydn might be causing executables that don't behave the same anymore?
I think that statistically, the number of programs that are self-modifying or jump to a non-aligned offset, you know, to like do some weird stuff like that, it's pretty slim. So I didn't really worry about that.
I believe, depending on how one implements an object model, that may in fact happen. If you have parameterized types, they may parameterize by including offsets and data structures of where the function pointers are.
Okay, cool.
Question? Anyone?
Demo, yeah.
Could try the demo.
That's right, I forgot. It does work, trust me. Okay. Can someone, like, do an NS lookup on that?
Anyone who wants to ask a question while this is being tried out?
This one is easy. What does Haydn mean?
Oh, well, it comes from the old English word for to conceal.
And your example with the XORs and the subtracts, doesn't the subtract set the condition codes and the XOR doesn't? So your program is no longer the same program?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, as I recall, like the subtract instruction sets condition codes and the XOR instruction doesn't.
Wait, the subtraction what?
The subtraction instructions, as I recall, set the condition codes.
Oh, yes.
The XOR instruction doesn't.
Doesn't, but...
So you don't have the same program anymore.
No, but...
But it matters.
It works.
Well, I can build you a test case in 3 seconds.
Yeah, sure.
It won't work.
I don't know if XOR does or does not check the flag. From what I remember, they're identical, but I could be mistaken. I'm pretty sure they're identical. Talk in the microphone, please.
I can tell you for sure that stuff like self-modifying code may not happen real often, but it happens often enough that it gives people who write binary translators and stuff like that fits. It drives them crazy.
Okay.
It happens.
Cool. Keep that in mind. Because it's being recorded.
You had mentioned about the condition codes for subtract and XOR being different. I would imagine you could do a static analysis that would say, oh, did the condition codes ever get checked? I guess I shouldn't modify them, otherwise it's safe to modify this instruction.
Yeah, I could try to do that, but it would be really difficult to implement.
Actually, the other thing that sort of strikes me is being too terribly worried about self-modifying code or code that actually does check the condition when you switch from XOR to sub or something. Your stuff doesn't actually have to work for all executables. It only has to work for lots of them. Because somebody's trying to embed a message. It's not like it has to work for everything.
It has to work for everything.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
I don't think it has to work for everything. I think it should work for the most common thing. Oh, cool.
it occurs to me that an optimizing backend for a compiler knows a lot of different ways to say the same thing, and it knows which ones are going to operate identically. Can you borrow technology from that field?
As it is, compilers don't say things in very many different ways, and that's the problem. Okay, well, let me just demo this. Alright, so, just to begin, alright, y'all know how LS works, right? So I took LS and, I embedded some information in it. And this text is in, b.txt. Now, the text file was too big, so I compressed it a little bit. And, the result was just LS. And, just to show you, no, it works. One more. Okay, so as you can see, it's LS for all intents and purposes. Now, show you the file size. They're both identical. Okay, can you see all right? People in the back? Cool. Now, let's see what's in that file. I hope you don't have sensitive people here. All right, so it prompts me for a password. Just blah. Ta-da. So, just to go through how you'd actually use Haydn, let's create a file. So, give me something to write, I don't know. CodeCon is cool. Alright. You just first specify the binary you'd want to embed into, and then pipe in the text, which is foo. Then, oh no, please don't go down. Well, anyways, you would have. You would have, hello? Yeah, you would have, this foo file. Okay, I think I turned it down again. But, if it comes back up, I'll show you. Any more questions?
Okay, thank you, Rakan.